I speak in the name of one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please be seated. As I've said before, and you likely know, the Episcopal Church runs on a three-year lectionary cycle, and the three-year lectionary cycle is based off of the gospel readings. We spend 1 year in each of the three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We just came out of the year of Luke. We've entered into the year of Matthew. Next year we'll be in Mark's gospel. And so the synoptic gospels share a similar synopsis, hence the word synoptic. They share a similar synopsis and theme. And while the synoptic gospels, each synoptic gospel has stories that are unique and individual to that individual gospel, on the majority, if it's found in one synoptic gospel, it is found in all three synoptic gospels. And then you have John, the Gospel of John. And John is intermittently thrown in all three lectionary years. It doesn't get its own lectionary year, so you get the Gospel of John intermittently dispersed between all three lectionary years. You heard the story from John last week with the story of Nicodemus. Now you hear the story from John's Gospel about the woman at the well. And John's Gospel is what I was told when I went to a Christian history class in my undergraduate secular college, meaning it wasn't religiously affiliated college. When I was in a Christian education class in my secular college, my history professor said that historians like the Gospel of John best. Because what the Gospel of John does that the three synoptic gospels doesn't do is throws in interesting details that aren't found in the synoptic gospels. Details that historians like to know. Things like in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus is praying on the night when he is betrayed and handed over and will be crucified the following day, we're told in the Gospels, all four Gospels, we're told that they're praying in the garden and the Roman guards come to arrest Jesus. In John's Gospel, we are told that a sword is drawn and an ear is cut off of one of the Roman soldiers. John gives us the name of that Roman soldier. Historians like that kind of thing. We like these interesting details that are found in one individual primary source. It feels like you can really trust it when you have a name thrown into one gospel that aren't present in the other ones, because why would someone put a name in when it doesn't have anything to do with the plot of the story? So historians tend to like John's gospel. But the other thing that John's gospel does is give you really long conversations that Jesus has with people, and you get to stand for them for the gospel readings, and I get to read a really long gospel reading. You heard a pretty long gospel reading last week about the story of Nicodemus coming to Jesus in the middle of the night, and you get that line, which is kind of the climactic line of John's gospel, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And this week you hear the story of the woman at the well. And the story of the woman at the well is one of my favorite stories in the Bible because I love the way in which the woman and Jesus interact. You do have the whole thing about the disciples coming back and the sower and reaper, and the gospel is frankly too large for me to touch on all of that. We could be here for days if I decide to preach on that as well. So in 3 years, when we get this reading again, maybe I'll preach on the sower and reaper. But for now, we're going to stick with the woman at the well. So we're told in the very beginning of the gospel that Jesus is tired from his journey and he's decided to sit down by a well, and that it's about noon. And this woman comes to draw water from the well at noon. And any of you who have ever carried a jug of water or have a swimming pool in your house or have installed a swimming pool or been around swimming pools know that water is exceptionally heavy. And when you carry water, it is ridiculously heavy. The more water you carry, the heavier and heavier and heavier it gets. And so in Jesus's time and in parts of the world, people would go to the well and draw water for a 24-hour period. You had to do it every day. You couldn't carry much more than 24 hours worth of water because it's frankly too heavy. So every day people would go to the water to draw water from the well for what they would need for a 24-hour period. But water is heavy. So you go first thing in the morning because you don't want to go and draw heavy water at noon under the heat of the sun and have to walk all the way back to your village. It's not practical. You're going to be tired. It's the worst time of the day to go. Literally, she could go at evening, she could go in the morning, but no, noon is by far the worst time of the day to go and draw water, and yet she's come to draw water for her 24-hour period at noon, which tells us that she doesn't want to see people. She is not looking for conversation. She does not want to run into people from the town. She does not want to hear gossiping about her. She does not want to speak to people. She wants to come to the well alone. And the well has an interesting situation in the Old Testament. We're first talking about the well is the story between Isaac and Rebekah. Isaac is looking for a wife, so he sends his servant to a well. And they stand at the well, and they're told that he needs to have a strong woman that will marry him. And the story goes like this. The servant comes. Rebecca comes to the well. The servant says to Rebecca, draw water for me from the well. Rebecca draws water from him from the well. She draws water for herself from the well. The servant says, now draw water for my animals from the well. Rebecca draws the water from the animals to the well. The servant says, you are strong enough because you can draw water for yourself, for me, and for the animals. You are strong enough to marry Isaac. You will come back with me, and you will marry Isaac. And that's the story of how Rebecca and Isaac get together. That is their entire love story, for the record. So the well is actually where you meet people. And oftentimes, people would meet their spouses at the well. So we're told that this woman is talking to Jesus, and Jesus goes back and forth with her around Samaria and the Jews. And the big thing about that is she says to him, our ancestors worshiped here at this well, Jacob's well. That comes from the Old Testament. That comes from the night when Jacob wrestled the entire night with the angel of God. And then the angel of God popped out Jacob's hip, and he walked with a limp for the rest of his life. And a well was built in honor of that. They're drawing water from that well. And so she tells Jesus that you worship in Jerusalem. The Jews, because Jesus is a Jew, the Jews worship in Jerusalem. The Samaritans worship here at this well. And Jesus says to them, there will be a time when you don't worship God in Jerusalem or at this well. You will worship God in spirit and truth everywhere. And then Jesus and her get into a little bit of her background. And we hear probably why she's come at noon. And she doesn't want to hear people or see people from her town. We're told that she has five husbands. And the person that she is with now is not her husband. And the interesting part about Jesus and her interaction is that she does not ask for forgiveness. She is told her history. She affirms that that is her history. She says she doesn't have a husband. Jesus says, you're right, you've had five husbands, and the one that you have now is not your husband. She accepts that as true. She does not ask Jesus for forgiveness, and Jesus does not offer it. Jesus does not offer her forgiveness. He takes what she has said about her past and lets it be. And then they go through this interaction further where she says, I see that you are a prophet because you can tell me what has happened in my life. And Jesus tells her that he is the Messiah. Almost universally, when Jesus discloses that he is the Messiah, it immediately follows with the phrase, but don't tell anybody. But that doesn't happen here. He tells the woman who has come because she is shameful of her past that he is the Messiah. He does not offer her any forgiveness for any of the sins of her past. He lets her be exactly as she is. And then she leaves her water, and she goes back to the city to all of the people that she has been avoiding, all the people that she didn't want to see that morning. And she says these words to them. I have seen the Messiah because he has told me everything that I have ever done. All of those things that she has held as shameful for her entire life, all of the reasons she didn't want to see those people in the morning, she is now regularly disclosing to them. She says, he told me everything that I've ever done. All of the things that she held as shameful minutes ago, she is now willing to talk about because Jesus has shown her a different way. Brené Brown, who is somewhat famous, she's done lots of TED Talks, she talks about shame and guilt this way, but you can also Google the definition of shame and guilt, and Merriam-Webster will give you a very similar definition. Shame and guilt are very different. So guilt says, I did something wrong. I messed up. Shame says, I am messed up. I am wrong. It takes a personalization of one in particular act. It takes what therapists would call a character assassination. It takes something that you've done wrong and you internalize it to the point where you think that one wrong moment defines every part of your being. I did something wrong. I am wrong. I messed up. I am messed up. And what happens here with the woman at the well is she carries shame. We're told she carries shame because she comes at noon. She has had a lot of shame for the five husbands in her past, and the person that she has now is not her husband, which is not done in Jesus' time. She carries shame with her to the well. And Jesus doesn't offer her forgiveness for her shame because she doesn't need it. She is not messed up. She is not wrong. He offers her a way forward, and she goes and evangelizes to people all the things that she has ever done and the way in which her life has been changed. So the thing for us is that we can be guilty. We can be guilty of even really great sin. We started the service because we're in the season of Lent with a penitential order where we read the Ten Commandments. We can be guilty of great sin, but we are not guilty of great shame. Jesus has taken our shame away from us. And just like the unnamed woman at the well, who does not ask for forgiveness for her past and is not offered forgiveness, but is offered a recounting of everything that she has ever done, we can use our past to bring others to God, because the God already knows everything that we've ever done. God knows our shame and our guilt. And from the woman at the well, we can let our guilt go. We can let our shame go, rather. You can hold on to your guilt for a second. We've already said confession, though, so you don't have to hold on to it anymore. We can let our shame go, because we are not shameful people. God has already taken that away. Amen.